Now, it seems like it was a type of a cul-de-sac. So there was a building at the end of the cul-de-sac, and the driveway to enter into the building project was quite narrow. As luck would have it, the next door neighbor to the building site had a car. And he wasn't so careful about how he parked his car, where he parked his car. So very often he would park his car across the entranceway to the building site. Builders, as we know, like to start early in the morning, especially in Israel. They come 6:30, 7 o'clock, they start building. The neighbor was still fast asleep and his car was sitting right there in front of the entranceway. So the builder, it was inconvenient for the builder. Often he would try and call the neighbor. He met the neighbor a couple times. He requested from the neighbor not to park the car there. The neighbor wouldn't always remember not to park the car there. Very often he would dump the car in front of the entranceway. He would try and get hold of the neighbor. Sometimes the neighbor would come and move the car. Sometimes he couldn't get hold of the neighbor, so he used to ask his Arab workers to please, bounce along the car. He couldn't lift up the car and move it along or bounce it along. And they did. He had an order, a cement truck was coming to do a delivery. He comes to the building site at 7 o'clock in the morning, and for Shteitzach, what does he see there? He sees a car parked across the drive again. So Hamosle Boaravoy is very upset. So he told his Arab workers once again, he said, move the car, move it in front of his driveway. And he finished moving the car, smash all the windows. They were more than happy to do that. So they moved the car, they smashed all the windows. So the owner of the car, he called the contractor to Din Torah. And he said that you smashed my car windows. I want you to pay for the repairs to fix all the windows. Windscreen, back windscreen, four windows, please pay for the repair. And the contractor said, no, I don't need to pay. He said, you have to call my workers to Din Torah, nothing to do with me. He said, yeah, but you told them to do it. He says, yeah, everyone knows you're not allowed to smash other people's things, you're not allowed to damage other people's things. Even a nondur is not allowed to damage someone else's property. Ain shliach l'dvar aveira. You can't appoint the shliach to do an aveira. So when I told them to go smash the windows, they weren't my shliach, they weren't my agent, they weren't my proxy, it's not as if I did it. They did it on their own accord, as it were. Therefore, I'm not chayav. Right, wrong, rosha, tzaddik. What's the gut feeling about this case?
Gut feeling is that the owner of the car is very annoying. That's the gut feeling.
Yeah, nothing more than that, right? The owner of the car is very annoying, but should you be here?
It's chayav, because those workers were sort of like skayon. I'm not sure you can say skayon by going.
You go, no, good.
And they were worried that they wouldn't be hired again if they didn't. They probably interpreted as an order, an instruction, and certainly didn't try and clear Shaira whether they would be brought to Din Torah because they're shlichim. So it's the boss says thing. I want to do what the boss says. We might not even pay me.
I don't think it's a taina. It's a wrong taina. You cannot say that. They're going to be fired if they don't smash the car. Obviously, they know that that's not part of job description, and they know that he's not going not to pay them because they don't smash a car. Yeah, I don't think it's a good argument. Yeah.
They're both chayav.
They're both chayav.
Yes.
Go on.
The builder we've already discussed.
Yeah.
Backwards and forwards, but the owner of the car for obstructing this thing also is chayav.
Okay, so if we can summarize the three gentlemen here, what you've said. Number one is he should be the balabais should be chayav because his workers are his employees, and they were worried they would get fired if they don't work, which is actually two separate times. Yeah, you're saying that it's too bad that they're worried they're going to get fired, but they just can't do other things which are wrong. And you're saying that the car owner is liable for blocking the pathway, and the balabais is liable
after
for
being warned several times.
Okay, they're all times which have to be reckoned with. And we're going to get to them shortly. We'll start just with your last idea that the owner of the car is liable because he should have blocked the driveway.
What's he liable for? What's he done?
What's he liable to do means that means he doesn't. It's not lifnei iver. What is like this is that if someone's blocking my wire, if someone's on, it's not mamash liable. Let's say someone parks in my driveway. Someone parks in my driveway. We spoke about this last time we were here. So if someone parks in my driveway, I can remove his car, but I have to remove it with minimal damage.
As
my wife's grandfather Blippi used to say, that if you have a car parked in your driveway and you want to move it, you have to smash the smallest window and let down the handbrake. You have to do the minimal amount of damage that's required to move the car. In this case, he was parked in public space on the road. He was blocking access. That's different. But let's speak to the balabais. Now, let's talk about another story. Before we answer this story, let's talk about another story.
Even if Dinah says you're not allowed to?
Pardon?
Even the dental mouth is not
a restaurant. So, believe it or not, it's actually a true story. It's not just invented for the shit. It really happened.
Well, so, I can see how it can happen. Yeah.
So, the next story was like this. There was back in Eretz Yisrael, you wanted to clean up an apartment. What do you do? Put water all over the place. Sponge, right? So, a gentleman hired a cleaner to come and clean his apartment. The cleaner comes upstairs, shows the cleaner around what needs to be done. Cleaner asks, where's the hole to put down the sponge water? So he says, it's in the kitchen. Go look in the kitchen, shows the hole. Fine. Cleaner starts doing sponge, finishes sponge, opens the hole in the kitchen, the drain in the kitchen, puts all the water down the hole. 2 minutes later, there's a pounding on the door. So the cleaner goes to open the door. The downstairs neighbor says, I've got dirty water leaking into my kitchen. What's going on? He says, you put water down the sponge hole in the kitchen, didn't you? He says, yeah. That's what I thought too. He says, it leaks into my apartment. So she went running to the Balabais, and she says to the Balabais, you know, there's sponge water leaking downstairs. He says, who told you? He says, the next door neighbor came upstairs and pounded on the door. He deserves it. Now, so who's
Chayav?
The Balabais is Chayav. The Jewish cleaner.
Well, it depends who is in charge of piping. Is it, if it's a flat, yeah, and there is like...
All owners. No, that's Lavdavka. No, at least the other side.
What do you mean, Lavdavka?
Because, no, not necessarily. Well, to get to it in a while. Why, go on.
The Grom also.
We're assuming that he knew...
The Balabais knew there was a leak.
Right, so there was a super ratio that would definitely...
Definitely happened. What's the difference between the first story and the second story?
Private property.
First one.
The Arabs had
private property. The Arabs had to ask, yeah.
Well,
go on.
In this case, didn't.
No, first one was in purpose, direct. The second one wasn't necessarily in purpose, and not the second one. Yeah.
Hear what he's saying? He's saying she was doing a normal job. She didn't realize she was going to do any damage.
Not just that, she was doing what you would normally expect.
Do what you would normally expect her to do. She was doing what she was instructed to do, and she had no intention whatsoever of doing damage. Whereas the workers, by the car, they had full intention to smash the windows. Had a lot of fun.
I mean, saying that he deserves it is just bad midos, but doesn't mean that he's liable.
It means that he deliberately knew what was going to happen. He was very happy with it. That's what I'm saying. Now, both of these cases we're talking about shliach l'dvarav here. And in both of these cases we're talking about where I made an agent, I appointed someone to do damages. I'm not allowed to damage anyone. It's not just a financial thing that if I damage someone, I have to pay back. There's a chiyuv not to damage someone. You're meant to protect. It's an avera. You're not meant to be mazik someone. So therefore, when I send an agent, a shliach, to damage, then I'm making a shliach advar avera. Where does the concept of shliach advar avera, an agent to do an avera, come from? So shlichos that we know, shlucho shel adam kamois, that we know a person's agent, a shliach, is like him himself. That we know from various places in the Torah. We know it from separating truma. If I have a field and I want to designate part of my crop as truma, I can appoint an agent to do it. It's learned after the pasuk of atem, gam atem. That I can. There's an extra wording in the pasuk that says that I can also appoint an agent. Excuse me. We learn it out from kiddushin and gittin. Excellent. We learn it out from korban pesach. Yes. There's one other place which skips my memory. There's four places where we learn out shlichus from. However, shlichus has its limitations. What's the limitations of shlichus? But I can't make a shliach l'dvar avera. Why can you not make a shliach l'dvar avera? Where does it come from? Divrei harav, v'divrei talmud, divrei mishem. When the master tells you to do something, and the talmud tells you to do something, who do you listen to? The Ribbono Shelem says, don't do something. Me, as a talmud kibyochel of the Ribbono Shelem, I say, do something. So who are you meant to listen to?
Yeah, but not shayach for a goy.
Ooh, no, huh? Number one is no shlichus for a guy. Number one is no shayach for a guy.
Because he's obviously.
Okay, so very good. You've raised two very important points, which are coming not much to the next step, but in a couple of steps time.
No shlichus by a guy. What about
Eliezer? No zikin by a guy.
Eliezer Avram was also not a Jew. If you look at the Maral Disc in Al Torah, Maral Disc in Al Torah discusses that when Eliezer came to Lavon, Lavon said to him, "Boy, Baruch Hashem." Now, we saw before that when Eliezer wanted his daughter to marry to Yitzchok, Avram said, "You can't marry Yitzchok because I'm Baruch and you're Oru," because Eliezer was an Evet Kenani. Mm-hmm. So why did Lavon say, "Boy, Baruch Hashem"? He wasn't Baruch. He wasn't blessed by Hashem. I think the Maral Diskin says that Avram was Meshachar Eliezer al Tanai. He freed Eliezer so that Eliezer could be a Shliach Kiddushin for Yitzchak.
But, anyway, but I mean,
that's a Maimon Muska.
But there is, or there is no Shliach le Goyim, it's something, but even if you say there is the Shliach for a Goy, what I'm saying is, Dira Ravi, Dira Talmid doesn't necessarily apply to a Goy, eh? Because he's not bound to the Tzibay of Kadosh
Baruch Hu. Okay, let's go slowly. Let's answer these two questions first. Okay. Where do we know there's no Shliach for a Goy? Atam Gamat. Where do we know, if there would be a Shliach with Dvar Avera, in some cases a Shliach with Dvar Avera, we're going to see in a minute, then we know that type of shlichus from somewhere else, not from Atam Gemata. That type of shlichus could have a goy. That means the source for regular shlichus says no goyim allowed. But the source that you can sometimes have a shliach, even to do an Avera, says that you can have goyim involved. That's an asivus. I don't want to go into too in depth because it's going to take us a good 20 minutes to work through. But, and on the second question, that the goy is not mechuyev, a goy is mechuyev. A goy is not allowed to steal.
Nizikin.
And he's not allowed to damage. Included in stealing, he's not allowed to damage. So he is obliged in this measure. You tell me a goy is not mechuyev to listen, he is mechuyev to listen. He may not want to listen. He may regularly not listen, and that will make a nafka min el halacha, but he definitely is chayev to. He is not allowed to damage another. Now, the Gemara in Bab Metzia Daf Yud discusses a question. The Gemara says that if a person steals a cow, and he's found out that he stole the cow, he has to pay back kefal, he has to pay back dam. Says the Gemara, I only know that a person can steal by schlepping the animal, by taking the animal. What happens if a cow wanders into a person's chotzer? Reuven's cow wanders into Shimon's chotzer. Shimon sees the cow in his chotzer, in his courtyard, and he decides he wants that cow. So he locks his door. He locks the courtyard door, and he locks Reuven's cow into his own chotzer. Is he called a ganef? He hasn't lifted it up. He's merely grabbed hold of it by his property. His property is holding the cow. Right? Reuven's cow wandered into Shimon's courtyard. Shimon locked the door of his courtyard. So now Shimon is holding the cow, but he hasn't held it physically. He's held it by the wall of his property. He's holding the cow.
So he hasn't achieved anything then, because it's not the Kenyan.
Can you chotzer?
Yeah, but it's not Hafka, so it can't be Koinet.
Now, what about a ganef who lifts up a cow? Is he Koinet? What he kind is. Kinyan Gizela. He's got a certain type of ownership. It's called that he stole it.
It's a Kinyan, yeah. He has to return it.
He has to return it. He doesn't own it yet, but it's the type that he's taken possession of it and he's stolen it, and now he has to give it. When he's found with Adam, he's going to have to pay double back. Mm-hmm. The same idea. When someone picks up a cow and steals it, picks up a chicken and steals it, yeah. So he's stolen it and he's going to have to pay back, and if he's found with Adam, he's going to have to pay back double. So the same thing, even if he doesn't physically lift up the object that's stolen, but rather he locks it inside his courtyard, so he's taken possession of it in that way, by his courtyard taking possession of it, he's also called a ganef. Says the Gemara, pardon?
If you leave your hat in my house.
And then you lock it with intention to steal it?
You have to have intention to steal it.
So he locks his courtyard with intention to steal it. So the Gemara says, how do we know he's chayav? Who said that's called stealing? Any Eliyodai, I only know a person is chayav for Gneiva when he takes it with his hand. All his properties, where he locks the animal inside his property, do we know is chayav? The Gemara says yes. If it shall be found in any which way, it uses a double expression. So the Gemara learns out from here that a chotzer is koneh. Says the Gemara, what is the mechanism for my courtyard to acquire things? How does it work? What's it similar to? So the Gemara says it's similar to a shliach. It's similar to Shliach. Just like an agent, I can give over, I can make my agent a proxy, I can make someone else a proxy, that he should work in my stead, he should do things on my behalf. So too, my courtyard works on my behalf. So the Gemara says, yes, so what are you doing? You're stealing, your courtyard is stealing on your behalf. Says the Gemara, what do you mean? If my courtyard is stealing on my behalf, it means that the Shliach Lidvar Avera. The courtyard is similar to an agent, and the courtyard is stealing on my behalf. I lock the cow into the courtyard, so how am I stealing the cow? My courtyard is stealing the cow for me. He's stealing the cow for me. So my courtyard is a shliach l'dvar avera. Says the Gemara, Matzinu shliach l'dvar avera. Have we found a shliach for l'dvar avera? Says the Gemara, yes, sometimes you can have a shliach l'dvar avera. Two tirutim, Ravina and Rav Sami. Ravina says, when do you say there's a shliach l'dvar avera? When do you say that there's no shliach l'dvar avera? Pardon?
Bartas.
1 minute, it's Bar Chiyuva. The Gemara says Bar Chiyuva. Rabbi says Bar Chiyuva. Where the Shliach has the Avera. Over here, the courtyard is an inanimate object that doesn't have any obligations, nor schosim, nor chiyuv, nothing. It's inanimate, nothing. So therefore, yes, true, a chotzer, which is a shliach, can act as can even work for a dvar avera, for an avera. Whereas the Rav Sama says the reason why a courtyard can act as a dvar chiyuv is because a courtyard has gotten the option of not listening to you. It has to listen. It doesn't have a choice. So now, in summary, we've got two gemaras. One gemara in Kedushin says, why do I say that there's no shliach with dvar avera? Why can't you point an agent to a dvar avera? Because Divrei Harav, the Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishemet. Who are you meant to listen to? You meant to listen to the Rebbein Shlomo, or are you meant to listen to the Talmud? Yeah. And we've got another Gemara about Matzio, which says that there's different qualifications of when you can say that a Fidyash Shliach with Varavera should function. One time is if the Shliach is not obliged in Avera, one option. Another option is saying when the Shliach doesn't have a choice.
Doesn't have
a choice in the matter. The Shliach doesn't have an option to say no. A courtyard can't refuse to steal on my behalf.
It's also not commanded.
Correct. It's not a bar chiyuva, and it's not.
It's not bar das.
What was not bar das?
So enough given in the cases, in the right. Case, but if it was an evid who was told to do something, not a goy,
yeah, why?
Not a goy, or not an evid is considered a evid kanani, right? He's considered the property of the.
Correct. It's considered
property, but he doesn't really have a choice. The difference between a skayoy.
No, definitely not. An eved does have a choice. An eved is considered in that aspect is considered a human being. If you tell an eved to go kill someone,
it's like an isha.
You tell an eved to go kill someone. He's mechuv to He's mechuv not to kill.
Because he's got mitzvahs.
The Gemara says there's an interesting nafkamin. The Gemara says what happens if a kohen tells the Yisrael to go marry, to go do Kiddushin on his behalf to a divorcee. A Kohen's not allowed to marry Grusha. Yeah, so he tells the Yisrael, go do the Kiddushin on my behalf. So if you say, so now there's a Shliach with Dvar Avera, but the Yisrael, the agent, hasn't got any problem marrying a divorcee. He's a Yisrael. It's not a Kohen. So if you say that you say Shliach with Dvar Avera, wherever the Shliach is not a Bar Chiyuva, where he doesn't have that mitzvah, so the Kiddushin would be valid. The Shlichus would be valid because the Yisrael is allowed to marry Grusha. But if you say that you only say shliach advar avera where the agent doesn't have a choice in listening, so in such a case the shlichus wouldn't take place. It's a shliach advar avera, and the Yisrael has an option of saying no. Okay, let's plug this all back into our Gemara. Let's plug this all back into our cases. These four. Okay, divrei harav, divrei talmud, divrei mishere. Why does divrei harav? Before we plug it back into our case, let's just analyze one more minute. Divrei harav, divrei talmud, divrei mishere. We say to a person, who are you meant to listen to? You meant to listen to the Rebbe, or you meant to listen to the Talmud? Who are we talking to when we say that phrase? That rhetorical question, who is that addressed to? Is that addressed to the person who's giving the instruction, or the agent?
Okay, the shliach.
Seemingly the shliach. Tell the shliach, who are you meant to listen to? You shouldn't have done it. So does that take away the liability of the meshaleach, the one who sent it, the principal? Why? Because the principal says this man. The principle that Mashalech can say, of course he's meant to listen to Rav Shalom. I'm not saying he shouldn't listen to Rav Shalom. He should know better. I thought he would never listen to me. Of course he won't listen to me to do an Avera.
Not allowed.
Pardon?
Not allowed.
He's not allowed to, so he won't do it. The Divrei Harav, Divrei Talmud is a logic and a svara to say that it's to take away the responsibility from the Mashalech. The Mashalech, when the Mashalech commands someone else to do an Avera, the Mishalech can say it was never a serious instruction. Why? Because I never thought he would listen.
So why did you say it?
Huh? Out of frustration. Yeah? If we plug that far back into our case, it wouldn't work so well. Because it was with full intent. He told them, he wanted them to smash the windows. That's what he wanted. Number two, did he really think that the goyim weren't going to listen to him when they smashed the windows? He told them to smash the windows. He knew they were going to smash the windows. They did it very happily. So, seemingly, according to that sefara, you can't say that there's no shliach with varavera. You say there is a shliach with varavera because he's got the meshaleach has got no excuse to say I didn't think he would listen to me.
They're not allowed to listen anyway.
But they still have a mitzvah not to listen. They're not allowed to damage.
Where's not allowed to damage?
No, it's part of Geneva. They're not allowed to.
Let's step back a second. Yeah. The entry of the Avera is rooted in Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmid, and there is no argument to say that I thought or I didn't think he would listen. Yeah, it just I told him. Yeah, and even if he's inclined to do it, and I think he's going to do it. Yeah, it doesn't mean they didn't have a choice not to do it. Yeah, so I still have an argument of Divra Rav, Divra Talmid. Yeah, so the same here. Yeah. He's asking the Arabs, and he knows they are very likely to do it, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean they didn't have a choice, yeah? If they were Jews, yeah? Now, there is an extra argument that they are Arabs, yeah? And maybe it's not Shayach the Divra Talmid, yeah? But the argument that I was very sure, very confident they will do it, yeah? It's not an argument, yeah?
Why not?
Because again, what's the principle of Divra Rav, Divra Talmid? If I ask you, yeah, I don't ask an Arab, I ask you.
I think I'm getting what you're saying.
Yeah, I ask you to do something, and I'm pretty sure you're going to do it because your nature to like, you like to do this thing. Yeah, you like to do the mess, you like to break windows, and you're going to do it. Yes, so I know you're going to do it. Doesn't mean that I'm chaya because I ask you, and I know you're going to do it. Because again, the very argument of Divra Rav, Divra Talmid means the shaliach should have known better, yeah?
So you're saying that Divra Rav, Divra Talmid means that, if I understand correctly, you're saying that even if you find the case where it's likely that the shaliach will listen, you still don't say shaliach at Faraveri because it's like a block.
Of course.
Divra Rav, Divra Talmid is all-encompassing.
Yeah. Of course.
What about it was a child?
It's machlaika shaliach.
Child or shaitan or something like that who has got no das.
Yeah, that's also machlaika shaliach because a child has got no shlichus on the hand. There's no shlichus for God.
I mean, very different from a chatzer, yeah? Very different from a chatzer.
Not say this is lifnei Eber. As the Mishaleh.
Definitely lift the Ever. Definitely wrong. Yeah, definitely lift the Ever.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So he's chayav at least that, right?
How much are you chayav lift the Ever?
It's over. He's over. Yeah, it's not chayav amanois. Yeah.
There's no monetary claim necessarily. It's a grammar maybe. Now, okay, so there's a discussion going on here with a Divra Harav, Divra Harav, Divra Talmud. Do we call that a definitive parameter? Or more of a broad parameter. If you call it a definitive parameter, then whenever we get rid of Divra Rav, Divra Talmud, then you say that there is a Shaykh of Varavir, for instance, when I know that they're going to listen to me. Whereas Rabbi, I don't know what your name is.
It's definitely not Rabbi, but
So he's saying that, no, Divra Rav, Divra Talmud just gives you like an indication that you can't have a Shaykh of Varavir. Because how can it be that you can have a Shaykh to do something against what the Rebbe Shalom wants? And that actually is the Svar of the Ritva on the Sugya. He says Divra Rav, Divra Talmud is not all encompassing Svar, it's not a definitive parameter. Rather, it's an indication to say that we never say Shriach Ledvar Avir. Okay, so now we already have Machlokes in Svar, right? We have Machlokes. According to one side, we would say that the Balabais, the contractor, is Chayev because he knew his workers were going to listen. On the other side, we can say no. The contractor, even if he knew his workers were going to listen, he's still pocket because there's no such thing as appointing an Avin to do an Avir which is damaging. Furthermore, so we've already got one machlokes. Furthermore, we've got another svara to patter the contractor, to exempt him. Because, as we mentioned before, that you only say shliach advar avera according to Ravina, you only say shliach advar avera where the shliach is not a bar chiyuva. He hasn't got that mitzvah. An example was a kohen who sends the Yisrael to be mekadosh grusha. The Yisrael is allowed to marry grusha. The kohen is not. But as we said before, a goy is forbidden to damage another's property. So inasmuch as he's forbidden to damage another's property, you can't say that he's not Baruch Yehova. It's true that maybe he doesn't listen to the mitzvahs that he's obliged to. But nevertheless, he's definitely obliged to keep them. He's mechuyav to keep the mitzvahs. He's mechuyav not to damage. And there are more paskins like that. The Ramah says that we define when you say Ein Shirech Advar Aver only when there's no Baruch Yehova. Where would it come into play that a goy is not a Baruch Yehova? What would a case be of where we can apply ancient that we can apply that this, because the shliach is a goy and it's not a Baruch Yehova, there should be a shliach at Varavera?
Shabbos.
The Rishonim, the Chorim speak about Shabbos. Gezel, Akum not asked you from another goy.
Amir
Lakum on Shabbos. Yeah. No, that's the Rishonim speak about. But there's a very interesting Chosh Mishpat case. The Chosh Mishpat case was that unfortunately once upon a time there lived a Ganef. True story. Yeah, Shavuos Yaakov. There was a Ganef and he was a known crook. So the known crook used to buy and sell stuff, and eventually everyone in town learned that you don't deal with this guy. Because you always get crooked, always get just. He had a shipment of cotton or something, cotton or flax, whatever it was, which was substandard, and he wanted to sell it. So he'd put all the bad stuff in the middle of the bale, and all the good stuff was on the outside of the bale, but no one trusted him. Yeah, anyone who can't try to sell a deal, no one wants to deal with it. So what did he do? He got hold of a goy, and he gave it to the goy, and he said, "You sell it, but don't tell anyone that's mine. Make as if it's yours. And you sell it." So that kachava, he gave it, the goy sold it for him at full price, as if it was all goods. Flax, he charged full price. The customer happily bought his bale of cotton or whatever it is, flax, and after a week or so of trying to get through it, you see that it's substandard. The goy had already pulled a runner, whatever, he couldn't claim from the goy, and he made a few inquiries, and he discovered what the story was, that it was a Yana Jew, Yana Crook, had made the goy a shliach. So he called the Jew to a din Torah, and the Jew said, "Ein shliach l'dvar avera. It's not my fault, the goy cheated you." So Shvus Yaakov said, "Amori the Gainfall," he said, what's the avera here? What is the avera that happened over here? By selling pardon?
Of course.
Mecha?
It's not stealing,
correct.
It's
not stealing. Mechatos is a right to go back on his head.
It's
close. Very close.
I know.
Who said I know?
Yeah.
What does it know?
It's too much. He's
overcharged. Substandard flax has a price.
It has
a price.
So, but
yeah, it's not the price of normal flax.
It depends, yeah, because in this case, what does it mean if there is no shaliach dvar avera? Because when the shaliach is doing an avera, but here, in reality, he's the recipient of the money, yeah?
Very good.
So it's not...
Shaliach speaks about that as well.
Yeah.
That if the money's still there, he has to give it back. But
in the mechir is bottle, though.
A mechir, wait, you know.
Yeah.
It depends how much. It depends how much. If it's
more
a
six.
More than a six,
which
yeah.
Which point would be?
Possibly, yeah, probably. If
definitely,
crook,
substandard, definitely more than a 6, yeah.
Yeah, a crook doesn't go for 16% profit margin, that's too little. Yeah, 16% is around the 6, yeah. So the Shvus Yaakov says, where is it? He says, for a goy to be ma'ana yid is no problem. A goy can overcharge and undercharge, there's no problem for a goy to overcharge and undercharge. If there's no problem for the goy to overcharge and undercharge, is the goy doing an avera? No, he's not a bar chiyuva. If he's not a bar chiyuva, then shlech le dvar avera. And therefore you can go back to the original Jew. That's where the nafkamina come from. Okay, so back to our cases of, let's say, the first case of telling the goy to do the damages. Telling the goy to do the damages. Therefore, the car owner doesn't have much recourse from the contractor. Number one, we've got a sofik whether you say shliach dvar avera is an all-encompassing svara. And number two is that the goy is also obliged not to damage another Jew. Obliged not to damage another. What about the case of the sponger? In the case of the sponger, the cleaner for sure is potter. The cleaner doesn't have to pay damages because the cleaner didn't have to enter the mind of the cleaner that was going to cause damages to another. So the cleaner is definitely potter from
the... I'm not even sure I understand the case. Yeah. If you just ask him to throw it in a sink, yeah, there's not even a avamina that he's...
Yeah, they put down the drain in the floor. You know, there's... Because you never enters your mind that it's going to leak into the downstairs neighbor, there's no chiv whatsoever.
There's no avamina.
No chiv. The clean is there. What about the house owner? The house owner knew jolly well, the flat owner knew jolly well that he's going to cause damage to the downstairs flat. There's no divra out of divra helmet. Because why would you not? Why should she not listen? Why would the cleaner not listen? There's no avera involved. She doesn't think there's any avera involved. So there's no divra harav, divra talmud. There's no svara to say. I thought she wouldn't listen. You knew she was going to listen. You knew he was going to. Whoever it was, the cleaner, he or she. You knew the cleaner was going to listen. So the chayu should be chayv to pay. On the other hand, if you say enshiach dvar avera is an all-encompassing, is a blanket rule, then she should be potter. In the case of the car, there could be there's another way to be mechayv. In the case of the car, there's another way to be mechayv. The other way is that. There's halacha of Moisa. Yeah, people know what Masir is. You can't hand over a Jew's assets to a non-Jew. That means handing over. You can't, if the king's looking for taxes, let's say, yeah, unjustified taxes, yeah, like anything above zero, yeah, and a guy's hiding things, a guy's hiding money, and he's hiding it from the king because he doesn't want the king to take away his assets. It's unjustified taxes. Another Jew goes and tells the king about that Pliny's hiding assets. The king goes and takes away the assets. The most the person who gave over that information is chayav to pay. Yeah, and it can be in very various different scenarios of how Masira happened and what the different cases of Masira. It's a very, very severe avera.
Yeah.
But even though in effect it's only a groma, it's only a causal damage because the person who gives the information to the non-Jew is not, in effect, he's not doing anything with his hands, he's just giving him the information. But nevertheless, we see it's such definitive damage that we say he's chayiv to pay back. In this case, the contractor, in effect, he handed over the car to the non-Jews. He gave the non-Jews the ability, gave his Arab workers the opportunity and the ability to damage another person. He gave he gave over the car to a case where it's surely going to get damaged. He gave over information which is going to cause the car to give damage. That is Masira. And for such a thing, it can be chayiv. So even though he's not chayiv al shliach l'dvar aveira necessarily, he's chayiv because he's given over information. It's so much so severe, the Issa Masira, that the Ramah says that even if I tell another Jew to go to be Moisa, to the authorities, I'm also chayiv. Reuven tells Shimon to go tell the authorities that Levi's hiding money. Reuven is chayiv.
How are you chayiv by
Masira? It's called garmi. Whatever he takes away, whatever the financial damages are.
Sorry, what is the source of Issa Masira?
What's the source?
Yeah.
It's the Rabbana. Garmi. Causal damages. It's a type of damage which is going to cause.
It's not necessarily a damage.
As soon as you tell a non-Jew that there's money to be had, you know it's gone.
But you can also.
Wasn't money. He was telling him to smash windows.
That's money.
It wasn't definite.
That's definite. No, he knew the workers were going to listen to it.
The gami is definite.
Yeah, that's right. He knew the workers were going to listen.
There's a chance he wasn't.
Yeah, if we're talking about a case where the workers are good workers, but yeah. If they stuff bottles down, they'll be stronger pipes. Yeah. It can depend on the situation, but in this case, it seemed like it was garmi. It was definitive. He knew it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, briefly, I just want to mention that in law, there exists a concept like this as well. So there was a Maaseh Shehoyah Kachoya not too long ago in 1853. There was an opera singer called Wagner, not the composer, a singer called Wagner. This Wagner had a contract with a theatre owner called Lubli to sing in the theatre for 3 months, 6 months, whatever it was. She was a very popular singer, and there was another theatre owner called Guy who really wanted this singer to come and sing in his theatre. But she said, you know, I'm under contract, I can't. I'm under contract with Lubli, I can't come and sing in your theatre. So he said, you know, I'll pay you more. He induced her to break contract, to breach contract. Now, she tackled it, she moves over to second theatre, and she sang at the second theatre. So instead of suing the singer for breach of contract, the first theatre owner sued the second theatre owner. So why did he sue him? What was the ground for the suit? He said, you've caused someone else, you induced someone else to breach your contract.
But it doesn't hold, you cannot do it, because I mean the contract is setting up the scene is saying, if you breach the contract, then you owe me such and such amount of money, yeah?
Yeah.
So she owes him.
She did that, Vera.
She owes him the money, yeah. And maybe he can go back to the theater to pushing
it out.
But no more than that. No more than what the contract stipulates.
That's what you say, Svara, yeah.
Okay.
Who did the Avera here, Kivyachol? Who was in the wrong? The singer. The second theater owner is a Machshil, whatever you want to call it. But he sued, and he won. Now, that was the first time this concept was used in law. And the way English law works, there's two, the statutory and common. And common law is that the judge can be mechadish something, you can mechadish an idea, and you can build on that precedent, and you can develop a whole new body of law. Yeah. So this idea became more induced, more solidified in law. In 1924, there was a case of where ship A crashed into ship B, and then ship B hit ship C. So the owners of ship C sued ship A.
That happened all the time with car accidents.
So it's called the curse. There was the curse of 1924.
Yeah.
But the wording in that.
Make money in the lawyers.
Yeah. It's never that they only make money. Yes. So the ruling, the wording in that ruling was, if one incites another to commit a tort is a damage in civil law, they are joint tort visas, meaning they're joint to mechuyav. And there's a. The authoritative work on tort and damages is called something called Cloak and Linzel. It's now holding the 24th edition, and it's cited almost word for word. That means that the concept, the rule of the law in English civil law is that if one induces or incites another to do damages, then you held joint tort fees. So let's examine this for a minute. Let's examine this. So consider the following cases. Reuven, Shimon had done business with Levi, and Shimon was baledik with Levi for whatever reason. Let's start a different way. Let's start that Reuven was angry with Levi, yeah, because Reuven had done business with Levi, and Levi was a crook, and he was very upset with Levi. So Reuven went and he hired a thug. He hired Shimon, and he said to go beat up Levi. Yeah. So what we've got here, we've got Reuven is the Meshaleach, and Shimon is the Shaleach, right? Yeah. Who was the Mazik? Shimon did the Mazik, yeah? Second case, Reuven and Shimon were both angry with the Levi, because Reuven and Shimon had done business with the Levi, and Levi was a crook. They were discussing what to do with, how to deal with Levi, and Reuven said to Shimon, he said, you're not Shimon, you're a bodybuilder, you go beat up Levi, for us. Yeah. So Shimon went and beat up Levi. Third case, yeah? Shimon was doing business with Levi, and Shimon was very angry with Levi because Levi was a crook. Shimon had no idea what to do. He went to consult with Reuven. He went to pour out his heart with Reuven. He said, I've got this load in my head. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I can't deal with Levi. And Reuven said, you know what? You need to free yourself from all these things, from all these, this all on your back. If you go beat up Levi, everything will be okay.
Yeah.
Right. So in all those three cases, by law, Reuven and Shimon will both be held equally. They'll both be held liable. Different degrees of liability. Varying degrees of liability.
Yeah,
whereas in halacha, it's not so.
In halacha, definitely the third one is patur lagamrei.
Because in Shimon would only be a shliach of Reuven if Shimon was acting on Reuven's behalf. In the first case, where Reuven said to Shimon, "Please go beat up Shimon on my behalf," then Shimon's a shliach; he's working for Reuven. In the second case, where Reuven and Shimon are both together, perhaps he's a shliach as well. But in the third case, Reuven's a rasha for telling Shimon to go beat up Levi. But that Shimon's a shliach of Levi, that's not true. But in law, he would be held liable. That's just a closing finale on this shlichus devar aver. Shkoyach.
Thank you very much.